And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business, health, and politics. Each of my guests will share his perspective on one of these topics. My next guest says, forget your assumptions about success and successful businesses. They're wrong. He explains the mindsets, the systems, and processes utilized by high-growth companies detailed in his book, The Physics of Business Growth. Edward Hess is a professor of business administration at the Darden Graduate School of Business at the University of Virginia. He spent over 30 years in the business world as a lawyer, investment banker, strategy consultant, and entrepreneur prior to returning to academia. Ed has extensive experience advising and financing growth companies and multi-generational family businesses. He is a magna cum laude graduate of the University of Florida and obtained his JD degree from the University of Virginia and his LLM, that's a master's in taxation, from New York University. Interestingly, he was raised in Carrollton, Georgia, and worked his way through college as a student football mathematician for the Florida Gators. He's happily married, loves to cook, travel, read, and play with his grandchildren and his two Tibetan Terriers. Welcome to the show, Ed. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me, Bill.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and thank you for being a subject matter expert. Your book, The Physics of Business Growth, is interesting. You believe that business growth isn't a function of like sexy products or high growth industries or even charismatic leaders, that there's more to it than that. So what are the key laws behind the physics of business growth?
Well, the physics of business growth, this book basically came out of 10 years of research, Bill, that where I looked trying to define what were the characteristics of high performing companies. And it was very interesting. I spent my business career in investment banking strategy consulting, and I went into that research with the following hypothesis. I said companies have unique products and services. They have visionary leaders. They have the best talent. They're the most innovative. And they also are lowest cost. They outsource or offshore. And basically, I created a financial model which tried to illuminate high organic growth companies, companies that grow the old-fashioned way, trying to sell more products and services to unrelated parties and arm's-length transactions on commercially reasonable terms. In other words, just like the corner store used to be when I grew up and when you grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And what that research showed is that basically less than 10% of the U.S. public companies basically grow the old-fashioned way for more, if you will, than 4 years and also more than 7 years. And so consistent real growth is rare. It's the exception. And those companies did not have unique products and services. They did not have visionary leaders. They did not have complex strategies. They did not have the best talent. They weren't the most innovative, and they didn't have the lowest cost. Many of them did not offshore or outsource. What they were, okay, they had simple focus strategies, what I call elevator pitch strategies. They had humble, passionate operators and leaders, most of whom had been with the company their entire life, came up from the bottom, had not forgot about what it was like to be an employee, all right? They didn't have the best talent, but they had a highly loyal and productive workforce, very low turnover, high efficiency, high productivity, high emotional engagement in the business. Most cases, the companies had high employee stock ownership, either through 401k or ability to buy into. That didn't mean they had large positions, each of them, but a lot of employees owned the stock. They weren't the most innovative. They were the best learners. They learned from their competition. They learned from their customers, and they didn't really have what I call fixed fortifications. And these big companies they had the small company soul and the big company body. And that led me to the physics of business growth, which looks at the two ways to grow. And one is operational excellence, better, faster, cheaper. The other is through innovation and constantly changing and improving your value proposition. And the reason the book is done so well so far is that the culture, mindsets, and processes in a company that drive operational efficiency are exactly opposite of the culture and processes that you need for innovation.
Right. And that was the most interesting thing. My guest is Ed Hess. And Ed, one of the things in your book that you really dive in deep on is this high level of experimentation that a company needs to have. Not huge bet the ranch types of things, but small incremental experiments, things that, that if they succeed, great. If not, and they fail, that's fine. We move on as well. That's really the key. So as we take a look at, let's use an example of a publicly traded company, Nokia. Nokia, for example, falls into the big bet, big payoff, big reward and risk if they miss, because they're trying to embrace a strategy using Windows operating system for their phones. Now, why is that anathema to being a successful business based on your research?
Well, one, innovation in growth, we know, is a high-risk type of venture, if you will. Where in operational excellence, your goal is 99% defect-free all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When you're trying new things, our research shows over 90% of them are going to fail. So you don't want to bet the ranch. So what you want to build is, we'll call it a growth pipeline that starts out with lots of ideas coming from employees, line employees, and customers. And you choose some of those ideas, and you're continually doing, as you said, small bets. We call it learning launches. Experiments, trying these things out. And you have a portfolio every year of experiments. Then you evaluate them. You decide, do I invest more, don't invest more? It's a little bit like going and playing blackjack in Vegas. You sit at the table. You watch the players before you sit down, so you know your environment, your competition. You know where, sort of got a feel for the cards. You start playing. You play some small bets. You're watching the cards. You're learning. And at some point, okay, you make a decision, do I double down, or on this hand, do I bet a lot? Because you're learning as you go. And so basically our research shows you have 1,000 ideas, and you try and test 100 of them in our learning launches. Maybe 10 of them you'll continually invest in, and maybe one of those will turn into a good revenue producer. And the problem with a lot of companies, Bill, is they don't have this ongoing portfolio funnel of continuous ideas and experiments ongoing. And you said they're small bets. You don't bet the ranch. If you have this continual ongoing, you also then have a portfolio of new initiatives. And where public companies make the big bets is when they don't have that portfolio, and they basically get to the point where their current product service is on the bottom side of the S-curve, they make what you call panic acquisitions or panic big bets. And those are high risk, and they rarely work.
Well, that they are. My guest is Ed Hess. We're talking about the physics of business growth, mindsets, systems, and processes. Ed, let's talk about a company. Maybe a business leader is listening to us in the car as they're driving today, and they're thinking, wow, okay, this makes a little bit of sense, but I'm rooted in the old style of management. You know, I'm trying to model my company after a Fortune 500, and I'm doing everything I can to be there. Now Ed comes along and says, I need to be making these small bets.
Yep.
In this economic environment, if I don't have a portfolio, a pipeline, as you put it, already developed, how do I make that shift? Because that is, A, a dramatic shift in my company's focus, and B, it's happening during very tumultuous times.
Yes, it is. And what you have to do is you have to start out really, really small, and it depends a lot on, as you can imagine, Bill, on the facts of your company, what type of product, what type of service, how big you are. But what you want to do is you want to start changing the mind shift. You want to start changing the mind shift. Okay, let's get closer to our customers. Okay, let's get inside our customer. What needs are we not meeting, and how can we meet them? What do our customers want, and how can we basically, if you will, put a small team that's sort of dedicated to working with a group of customers and trying some experiments and then seeing where they work. And so you try small. And most companies, when they start out, they say, okay, let's go to adjacencies. What other complementary product, or what other way can we, change our widget, all right, to either go down market. But it's much more sitting back and saying, what's keeping our customer awake at night, and how can we help them solve that problem, and what do we bring to the table? What capabilities do we have?
All right,
so it's a mindset.
All right,
change the mindset, change the focus from product to customer, change the focus for, if you will, execution to the focus. Let's go start doing some experiments and start small. So do 10 experiments.
All right, Ed. Now, let me stop you right there, because really what you're saying is you have to create the right team to do this learning launch, as you call it. And the right team has to have certain characteristics. And two of them that I've singled out specifically to talk about is this team has to be engaged in critical inquiry, what you're talking about, what keeps my customer awake at night.
Yep.
But then they have to participate in critical debate. And this is the sticking point, because a lot of companies, while they might be able to find out what a problem is, they're all gun-shy to discuss this in an open way because of territoriality, because of hurt feelings, because of all of the human factors involved. So talk to me about how do you break a team's mental brace so that they can become a learning organization?
Well, first, it has to come from the top down, Bill. It's got to come from the CEO, the owner, the leader, the president. And it's basically got to become cultural in the sense. All right, we got to be a learning organization, ladies and gentlemen. What are the characteristics of a learning organization? It's just what Bill said. It's critical inquiry. It's constructive debate. We debate ideas. It is not personal. And basically, we're going to have a new rule here, okay? If you debate, you get a gold star. If you don't debate, that's bad.
Okay. Right?
And then we start measuring it, and we measure leaders' behavior. And you sort of get like in the Army, permission to speak freely, sir. So you don't need permission to speak freely. You may say what's on your mind, and there will be no retribution, no punishment, and We're going to rate all the managers and leaders on 360-degree reviews. Okay, do you enable critical inquiry? Do you encourage constructive debate? Are you open to being challenged about your assumptions? Do you listen to other opinions? Do you ask other opinions? Or do you shut down debate? Do you come across as a know-it-all, my way or the highway? Are you hierarchical? And in a lot of companies, okay, when you make this change, a CEO's got to be willing to fire a senior executive, because there's going to be somebody that won't play the game, and you've got to fire them.
All right. Now, that's a dangerous thought. My guest is Ed Hess. We're talking about his latest book, which he's a co-author. The book is titled The Physics of Business Growth, Mindsets, Systems, and Procedures. So, Ed, let's come back to this team for just a minute, because this is so critical to becoming a vibrant company based on all of your research.
Yeah.
And this team has to be able to embrace these new mindsets that you talk about.
Yep.
But they also have to be worried about a couple of things, too. And then three things that come to mind is, from where does the money come for these small experiments?
Right.
What happens when the small experiment fails? Because 90% of the time you say it's going to fail, so
chances are
it's going to fail. And then what happens to the employees if they're working on one of these projects that fails? You know, are they going to be in fear of losing their job, et cetera?
Yep.
So let's address those, the money and the failure, and then what becomes of the employees.
All three good questions. All three good questions. The money's got to come, obviously, from the corporation and from working capital. But it doesn't take a lot of money. I work with a lot of big companies, all right? You know, $5-10 billion in revenue and bigger. But just to do a learning launch, out-of-pocket expenses, and you maybe you end up doing three different learning launches on the same idea. It costs you $50,000 to $75,000 out of pocket. I mean, so it's not big money.
Not to a big company, but to a mid-size or small company, that might
company,
be a lot.
$50,000 or $75,000. Well, to a small company, it's a lot. Then you basically got to decide how you do a smaller number. You look at all the ideas and you pick ones which are you think mission critical to your customers, and you go. And you're gonna have to spend $25,000 to $50,000. All right.
All right.
Now, number two. So long as you're learning, there is no failure. All right? You should not be punished, and the company basically has to walk the talk, the CEO. It's interesting. Companies I work with, it basically comes down to the point, if you're not willing to fail, don't try to be innovative. All right? Just go be a great operational company. If you're not willing to accept failure, and the definition of failure only occurs on a failed experiment where you didn't learn anything. So long as you're learning, you didn't fail. As a company out in your area of the country, Pixar has a great saying, okay? In their culture, you don't use the word mistake. No one makes mistakes. You engage in what you do is a learning opportunity. There's no mistake, there's a learning opportunity. And You got to get that attitude, and you're not punished so long as you learn. Because another company I worked with had a great saying. We basically celebrate learning launch successes, we console failures, and we get rid of people who won't try.
Very good advice. My guest is Ed Hess, author of the book, The Physics of Business Growth. So, Ed, I'm going to ask you to give me some, I'm going to shotgun some companies at you and give me your impression whether they meet with the physics of business growth. And I'm going to start with a company here in Northern California, Facebook.
Yes.
Okay. What about Procter & Gamble? This is a tricky one.
That is a tricky one. As you know, they've been trying to regain their innovative capacity for years. They went to outsourcing their innovation. I would say, and again, this is pure opinion, I would say no, they haven't been that successful.
All right. And now a little compare and contrast. Apple versus Microsoft.
That's interesting. One, you know, I don't know a lot about the internal. I mean, if you look at what Apple has done, clearly they have transformed industries through their design and innovative design. And Microsoft right now is Microsoft, again, I'm not an expert on Microsoft. To an outsider, Microsoft is a big company that is probably struggling to regain its small soul. Apple is a big company that has maintained its small company soul.
All right, that's well put. I love it. So, Ed, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The Physics of Business Growth?
Be realistic. Understand that if you're going to be a great growth company, you got to have the right culture. You got to align that culture with leadership behavior. You got to measure those behaviors. You got to reward those behaviors. That growth and innovation comes from them, from attitude, behaviors, using the right processes. There is no easy silver bullet. It is hard work, and the only way to get in and do it is to start.
Very well said. My guest has been Ed Hess, co-author of the book, The Physics of Business Growth, Mindsets, Systems, and Processes. Ed, if people are intrigued by what you have to say and they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
They can Google me on the Internet, and they can see lots of articles and op-ed pieces that I've written, and then they'll find my website, edhltd.com, which has lots of my writing. There's more stuff than people will want, I can assure you.
That is great. Ed, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you for your interest in my book. Take care.
Take care.